This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Are you ready?
I love you so much. Yes, I'm ready. I was born ready.
Here we go. Welcome to the 1000 Hours Outside podcast. My name is Jenny Urich. Oh, I'm so thrilled with our guest today. Molly Stillman is here. Welcome.
Oh my gosh, Jenny. I have had this date circled on my calendar for like a month now, and I've just been looking forward to it so much. When I had you on my podcast back in the fall, we immediately became friends. And I just was immediately like, you are my people. And so I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much.
Aww. It's such a thing sometimes. Like, I don't even know quite how that happened. And, you know, I had a book coming out. So someone's working behind the scenes to connect you with different people.
Yeah.
And we connected and we connected. And then you have a book coming out. So we're doing this swap. And I just was thinking the other day, like, I loved your book so much. It's a memoir. It's so neat. You wrote a memoir. It's called If I Don't Laugh, I'll Cry. And I'm not sure like if I would have read it if we wouldn't have connected. And I'm so glad we did. I was so glad. I hardly could put it down. It was one of those books where I was like, I don't want to go to sleep. But then all these people I talked to are like, sleep is very important. So I was like in this conundrum. Like, I don't want to put this book down. It was so moving. I'm so glad. I think our listeners are in for such a treat today to have you here. Let me read your bio. Host of Can I Laugh on Your Shoulder? Such a fantastic podcast, sought after speaker. You had a lifestyle blog that started all the way back in 2007. You're into ethical style. So people that are interested in that, you have this phenomenal resources on your website. Maybe we'll talk about that later, stillbeingmolly.com, where like every single category of anything you'd ever want, they can find the different shops that are ethically sourced and things like that. You have just a lot going on your farm, and this book is your story. Okay, I've already talked too much.
No, I love this. I love this.
I haven't asked a question yet, but I want to tell you just one. But I'm going to keep going because I want to tell you one other thing. So the year before, I just wasn't feeling very good. It was doing like too much stuff on the computer. We're still getting outside, but the times when I was inside, it was just like stuff on the computer and work. And I don't know. I just felt like this imbalance. And so I was seeking to bring more joy into my life. And I started reading fiction. That was one of the things. And so one of my favorite books I read is a book called The Great Alone by Kristen Hannah.
Yeah.
I mean, one of my absolute favorites. I also really liked hers, The Nightingale.
Yeah.
This was just a shift I made in my life.
Yeah.
So and she had a new book coming out called The Women.
Yeah.
And I was following along because I was like, oh, I mean, I just love her books. I was following along on social media and I saw that you two were messaging back and forth. I was like, what is this? I was like, Molly knows her? And then I was like, I'm going to ask about it. But then I didn't want to seem like a stalker.
No.
So I didn't ask you about it. And I'm actually so glad that I did not ask you about it because here's what happened. I was in Colorado with my daughter. We were taping for MOPS, their fall curriculum. And the day that Kristen's book came out, we were at this cool bookstore called The Tattered Bookshelf or something like that. It's like a famous one in Colorado. And I picked this up. I was like, this will be my souvenir. And I read half of it. And then I handed it off to my mom because I was going to be busy and I couldn't finish it right then. And she wanted to read it. So I was like, oh, you can just borrow it till I'm ready, whatever. And then I picked up your book. And I was like, oh my goodness, The Women book is about Molly's mom.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what in the world? And then I picked up one. And I read your mom's memoir.
You did?
I did. Home Before Morning. The story of an army nurse in Vietnam. What a thing. What a thing, Molly. We're already crying.
I know, we're already crying. We're only like 5 minutes into this. Oh my God.
Because it works with the title of the book, If I Don't Laugh, I'll Cry. And actually, there's one other book I got, and people are going to have to read the book. But I also grabbed this one, The Blessed Life.
Oh my gosh, by Robert Moore.
Yeah, I can't wait to read that one. But you know what, Molly?
Oh,
I couldn't even really believe, like, what a thing that there is this trifecta of books out there, that yours and your mom's and this one that Kristen Hannah just wrote, The Women, that they are this triangle of meaning and depth. And I had no idea. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what went on in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. I've read so many World War II books and just other historical fiction, but I had no idea. And it was so powerful, Molly, to read all three.
I mean, I am just like incredibly overwhelmed in this immediate moment, because what you just, I don't think you really fully will ever understand like what you sharing that means, on a like fundamental level. And I'm telling you, like, it's been a wild ride, and just like, obviously we'll get into all the nitty gritty of it, but I think it's been a wild ride. And this year has been so many God winks and so many like mom winks. And I tell you, so I'll just tell this, the story of how Kristen and I met, because I probably most of your listeners have heard of her. You know, if you are really up into reading in any way, shape or form, she, you know, I mean, The Nightingale is the number one selling book of the last decade in the fiction category. And the Women is, as of we're recording this, it's the number one selling book in all of America. And also, I think possibly the world. I mean, it's just like insane.
Oh, and it's your mom's story.
It is.
Like literally stories from your mom's book.
Literally.
So then this is what I did. Then I bought another copy because I'd already given it to my mom.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, no, I have to finish it because I'm going to be talking to Molly next week.
Yeah.
So I got another copy because I wanted to finish.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I've already read so much of this. It's incredible.
It's wild. I mean, and then I don't know if you saw, but my mom's book, like Home Before Morning, is mentioned in the acknowledgments of The Women. So
yes, yes, I sure did.
Okay, so I fell in love with Kristen's books back in, I don't know, probably 2016, 2017. I read The Nightingale. That was my gateway into her books. And then I read The Great Alone. The Great Alone is like what made me just absolutely fall in love with her writing. And then I remember at the time texting a friend and just being like, well, now I'm in a Kristen Hannah rabbit hole. And like, I'm trying to read all of her books. I have not read all of them yet, but I'm working through her like entire, because she's written, I mean, The Women was, I think, book 26. So she's written a lot. So I'm like slowly working through the whole catalog. And for perspective, I've read The Great Alone three times. So I've done the audiobook. I've read the physical book.
It's such a good book. The ending of that one, the ending of The Women. You know, I think you read a lot of fiction and you remember it. But like hers, you really remember.
You really remember it.
Yeah.
For sure. And so, and then of course I read The Four Winds and all of that. And so I had followed her work and I had loved her work. And I thought what was so unique about her was not just that she wrote really good historical fiction, but she was writing about women in general, who like these female characters who lived during very real parts of history and are kind of composites of women during that time. And she just shows the beauty and the resilience of women and the strength of women in a really unique way. And so I followed her work. And then last June, I believe, maybe May, is when she announced The Women. So I was following her on Instagram and like I'd opened up the app and it was like a post of hers had come up and it was the little like 15 second teaser of The Women. And it didn't even really have a summary. It was just called The Women and it had this kind of music and then it showed some helicopters. And I was like, this has to be a book about women in Vietnam. Like it just has to. And then more information started coming out. And when I read the summary for The Women, I was like, I may have said some expletives in my head. Like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe this has to be. And so in that moment, I was like compelled and I sent her a message. I emailed her.
Wow.
And I was like, hi, I don't know if you like, you don't know me, but I'm shooting my shot here. Like, I want to say like, I love your books and, you know, I just would love to talk to you because in my head and really at the time I was thinking about, like, it didn't really make sense, like why I was reaching out to her. I think I just was like, I wanted to thank her for writing this story because like you said, like in school, we didn't really learn about Vietnam. Like just, I mean, I know a lot about Vietnam because of osmosis of who my mother was. And so I just wanted to thank her. And so I was like, I want to know about your process. And like, and in my head, I think part of me was like, if she did research for a historical fiction book about women in Vietnam, she had to have come across stuff about my mom. Wow. Like there's just, I don't think it is actually possible for you to research women in Vietnam and not come across my mom.
Yeah.
And like, I didn't really hear anything. And she hadn't responded. And I was like, whatever. I mean, she's Kristen Hannah. Like, she's never going to respond to me. And then next thing I know, out of nowhere, I get a DM from her. And she's like, hey, essentially, I've been looking for you. And I was like, what? And so she's like, I would love to send you an advanced copy of the book. Will you take a look? And I was just like, but then I, of course, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I rattle off all these questions. And then she responds back, like not answering any of my questions. And she's like, read the book and then let me know what you think. Hmm. And so she overnights me a copy of the book. I get it. And I read it in a day and a half. But when I got it and I open it up and my husband was standing right there, my daughter was standing right there. And I just like, I held the book in my hands. It's just an advanced reader copy. Mm-hmm. And I just flipped to the back, would just like instinctively, and I opened up to the acknowledgments. And there in the acknowledgments was Home Before Morning by Linda VanaVanner. And the sob I sobbed, Jenny, just immediately started crying.
Yeah.
Just like, I can't believe this. Because again, to me, it wasn't just the fact that there was a historical fiction novel about women in Vietnam. It was like, of all people to write it, my favorite author, like what?
She wrote your mom's story.
Right. And so it just was like, it was like, what? And then she also, and then to know that like one of her, essentially like the nurse that she worked with, you know, to fact check and review it was Diane Carlson Evans, who was like, one of my mom's very good friends. Like Diane Carlson Evans was the founder of the Vietnam Women's Memorial. And she and my mom, like I stood there with her and Diane's daughter. I was, you know, 8 years old, 9 years old at the groundbreaking of the Women's Memorial in DC. And like, I stood there with Diane and like, I've known Diane, you know, for so much of my life. And so then to know that she was a part, I mean, it just was like, this is not a coincidence. This is not an accident. The next thing I know is I finished the book and of course I'm weeping through all of it. And I send Kristen a message back. She's like, what'd you think? And did you see the acknowledgments? And she said, can I call you? I was like, sure. So then we end up on the phone for like over an hour and just immediately there was this connection. And then fast forward, she and I got to meet in person in November. We both attended the 30th anniversary of the Women's Memorial in DC together. I was speaking there. She was there. My mom was actually being inducted into the Military Women's Memorial at Arlington National Cemetery. And so like she was there for it. And it just became like there was this kindred connection and just this bonding over this passion for these women. And then in the end, you know, she'd asked me, it came up that I was writing a book. Like I hadn't even brought it up. And she had said something about like, you should really write a book. And I was like, well, I actually have a book coming out in March. And she was like, well, I'd love to read it.
Like, oh, well, it's very similar to your book.
I know. And so she proceeds to read it. And then she not only read it, but she endorsed it and she wrote the foreword. And
I didn't even know that because I have an advanced copy.
And yeah, it's not in there.
I don't have it. I don't have the dedication or the acknowledgments or the foreword. And it's a little bit of a hole there for me. Oh. I didn't even know she did the foreword.
You wrote the foreword.
Oh, Molly.
Yeah. When she did that, I mean, one, I am nobody. Like, I am nobody.
But I mean, you know what, though? She wrote your mom's story. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you are somebody.
Oh, my God.
I think the fact that she was looking for you, I get why. Yeah. I get why. Because actually the story ends and then you're the one who would pick it up. Mm-hmm. What happens in the next generation? What is it like to be mothered by someone who spent a year in Vietnam and was witness to all those things and also all the chemicals? So I could see why she would want to find you because you're the next part of that story. And even I was surprised in your mom's book, which is what I'm saying, like you could change your life this year with this trifecta of books. So you read The Women by Kristen Hanna. You read Home Before Morning, which is by your mom, Linda VanaVanter, which is such a fun name. Yeah. And you read yours, If I Don't Laugh, I'll Cry. And yours is the culmination.
Yeah. And that's, I really love you that you said that because a friend of mine who also read an advanced copy, this was something I didn't expect with my own book. As she actually said, she was like, yours kind of picks up where your mom's left off.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I had never considered that. But anyway, that was obviously a really long answer to all of this and how it all came about. But really, it's been a wild thing to just see this God wink and to see like this almost, you know, I just kind of am like, I realize that there's no theological backing for this whatsoever, but I just kind of am like, I just like to think my mom was up there in heaven just being like, hey, Jesus, let's talk about this real quick. You know what I mean? I realize.
Can we time these two books to come out the same year and within a month of each other?
It's not an accident.
I mean, even that, Molly, because that's what I wanted to know. I was like, well, were you talking with Kristen Hannah about your mom?
No.
And then timed the books? And
No. It is a complete coincidence.
What?
It's a complete, and that's what, like, one of those things that's just like, it's just not, it's,
wow, Molly.
I just don't believe in coincidences anymore.
Yeah.
And so it's just been a really, really cool experience, but thank you too, for, like I said, picking up my mom's book as well. And it's been really cool to see how, I mean, I know that people still read it, cause it's used as a textbook at a lot of universities.
Yeah.
Funny enough. And you know, this from reading my book, my husband read it when he was in college.
I loved that. And he remembered it. It's moving. Well, because you're so shocked.
Yeah.
You're like, how could I not know any of this? I went to school. I like history.
Yeah.
I like historical fiction.
Right.
How could I not know any of this?
Yeah.
So I could see how it would be a book that you really remember.
Yeah.
What a thing. And he had read it before you even met.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal the way the three, you didn't show up until like page 300 something.
Yeah.
322. You were like right at the very end.
Yeah.
I was like, when is Molly going to come on the stage here?
Yeah.
Right near the end.
That was obviously the updated version, because the original version was printed in 1983.
Oh, so you weren't even in that one.
No. And then the updated with like the epilogue came out in 2001, and then she died in 2002.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Your book is one of the most powerful moving stories I've ever read.
Oh my gosh.
And when I took the three together, I was like, this is life changing, because you have a better understanding of just history and what people went through. I'm just like wiping my nose with my sleeve through this entire episode, because my nose is running and I'm crying and I have no Kleenex in here.
Oh my God.
But I truly, it was so moving. If I don't laugh, I'll cry. And I was thinking about in preparation for this one, I'm like, I can't give stuff away. Mm. It's a tricky book to talk about in a little bit of that sense, because there are certain things in here like you do not want to give away in a conversation, because it's such a powerful book. Like, you get to these spots and it's jaw-dropping, or you get the chills or you cry. And so I was like, I really want to navigate, because I think we need books that move us, and I want to entice. Like, this is one you want to pick up for this year. If I don't laugh, I'll cry. And especially if you read The Women, this is what goes right along with it. So I love it. I like the chapter titles. I like, this is the things I wrote. I like the font. There's so many things to love about it. On weekends, we're typically off on another adventure. Whether it's a scenic hike or a quaint town visit, I keep my Vessies with me, because they effortlessly adapt to every twist and turn, ensuring comfort and style in our sometimes spontaneous escapades. Whether it's with the kids or just my husband and me, which is pretty rare, I love stepping into a great outdoor adventure with Vessies Storm Burst boots to capture the beauty of springtime landscapes. Their robust style is perfect for our nature excursions, adding a little dash of elegance to our outdoor explorations. The Vessi collection caters to every style. Whether you're dressing up for a night out or gearing up for a weekend hike, these shoes seamlessly blend into your wardrobe while offering the practicality of waterproof footwear. Ready to refresh your spring wardrobe? Vessi has you covered with footwear that fuses style with practicality. Head over to vessi.com/outside to explore their versatile collection and automatically claim your 15% discount on your first order upon checkout. That's vessi.com/outside for 15% off your first order.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck. And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it? We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders. So, join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Get out of there, life gunk. Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January. Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking
It. But there was just a lot of topics in here that, I don't know, like they don't have anything to do with getting outside. So we're just going to get that out of the way. It's just a fun conversation to have about life and motherhood. I've always loved that phrase, or it's a quote. It says, in search of my mother's garden, I found my own.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought about so much to your book, you know, in searching and having this very unique experience of the mother that you had and wanting to follow in her footsteps. And you did. You wrote your own memoir and she's got a memoir. And I thought that was so beautiful. But there's so many things in this book, so many themes that I think a lot of us deal with. And one of them, and a really big one, was just how do we deal with being misrepresented? Mm-hmm. I thought that was a big theme throughout the book. Like, hear your mom. People have a lot of reading to do. Like, you're going to read The Women. You're going to read this book. You're going to read Home Before Morning. This is a situation that maybe you've never heard of, is that all these nurses, they went to Vietnam. They come home. They have seen horrific, horrific things. They have worked like no one has ever worked before. Mm-hmm. And they come home and your family, your extended family was saying, oh, she's telling a sensationalized story. She's mm-hmm. doing these things for attention. She's not really sick. You know, she's just trying to do this. And your extended family crumbled.
Yeah.
Which is just so heartbreaking in a time that was so hard for you to begin with. Yeah. So, you know, what do we do? What do we do when we're misrepresented like that?
Yeah, I think I learned so much from my mom about identity and like knowing who you are. And it's so funny because I mean, I still struggled with it big time. And I talk about that a lot throughout my own story. But I think now in my, you know, my late 30s, I have a different perspective on it. And what's really interesting is like, so my mom's, so Home Before Morning was published when my mom was 37, 36. Math is hard for me. And so I'm a little older than she was when Home Before Morning came out. And so like, that's a weird mental place to be. But, you know, she wrote it from a place of healing and a place of security. Whereas in her younger years, she struggled with that. But then I watched her as an adult, in her later adult years, really, you know, be broken down, but also know where her foundation was and know who she was and know her own, whether other people called her morals, her ethics, her integrity, her values, all those things into question. She knew who she was. The people closest to her that wanted to be in her life knew who she was. My dad knew who she was. I knew who she was. And then, of course, like her inner circle of friends that valued her knew who she was. And so that, I think, is really important. And I think is something that I've taken away from in my own life, knowing who I am, but also like, who do the people who are closest to me know who I am? Hmm. And what I mean by that is like, am I not just who I say I am in my book, on the internet, from a stage, like if I'm preaching on a Sunday morning or if I'm speaking at a conference or whatever, like if I'm doing those things, do the people that don't know me and they see that the version that I'm presenting or the version that I'm putting out there, is it the same version of myself that my husband sees, that my kids see, and that like my friends in my small group, like my community, my life group people, like the people who are genuinely closest to me in life.
Like me?
Yes, exactly. But like, do those people, would they say she is exactly who she says she is? Or do they see a different person that I, like a different persona that I portray? Mm-hmm. One of the just personal values, and I think I've really thought about this a lot over the years, like I learned it from my mom, is I just value integrity. At the end of my life, like there are things, you know, that I want people to say about me at my funeral. But like at my funeral, like I don't want people to say, oh, she had this many followers on Instagram. And like, she sold this many books.
She was really good at karaoke.
Yeah. Like that's not what I want people to say. I want people to say that I was a person of integrity, that I was a person who was exactly who I said I was, that I was generous and that I brought them joy. You know what I mean? And so like, when you think about, and maybe it's a little morbid, but I guess if you've experienced death, because I think about like what was said at my mom's funeral, the people that were there that meant something to her and she meant something to them, those people said, I mean, all people talked about were how generous she was, how she invited them into, she just was never withholding. Like in that, you know, the door was always open. I mean, a bunch of my friends, I was a senior in high school, a bunch of my friends stood up and gave eulogies.
Wow, Molly.
Like, and I think back to that because like, because of who she was, a mother to like everyone. And I've tried to value that in like, I think about how when my friends had like got broken up with, they would come over to our house and like cry into my mom's shoulder.
Wow. And your mom was sickly.
Yes.
I mean, this is a really important piece to say is that she had had X amount of joint replacements. She was in her 30s, three knee replacements already, a hip replacement, needing another one, a shoulder replacement. This is all written about in the book, but because a lot of this chemical exposure that they didn't, I don't know if they did or didn't know what was going to happen after Vietnam, but she had all this chemical exposure. And so she's recovering. I mean, I know people, if they've one knee surgery, like you're recovering. She's had all of this. She's in pain.
Yeah.
And here she is still an open door.
Yeah.
That's big.
Yeah. And that's how she was. I mean, I remember like we always had in our car, like gift certificates to McDonald's or bags of things. So like if we came across somebody who was experiencing homelessness, like she would stop, she would get out and she would hand them, you know, a gift card for food, or she would hand them a coat or a scarf or something. Like she just, there wasn't a question about it. She just saw people for who they were. She didn't judge them. She didn't. And she just made friends everywhere she went. And then there were a lot of people who said really horrible things about her.
Yeah.
I mean, there was an entire organization created to discredit her in the 80s. I mean, it nearly bankrupted her and my dad, you know, in fighting off all of these allegations and just so many things. And yet she never wavered because she knew what she was doing was right. She got to the point where she just said, like, you can say what you want, but I know who I am and I know what I'm supposed to do. That is so hard, you know? And then of course, like when she lost her family, you know, she was one of five sisters after her dad died in 96. So 2 years after she got sick, the family just crumbled. And so not only did we lose her sisters, my aunts, I lost my grandmother who was not dead, but like she was no longer in our lives. I lost my cousins. She lost her cousins. She lost her aunts and uncles. I mean, it was
devastation upon devastation.
Devastation upon devastation.
Because it was so interesting to me, Molly, in reading her book and your book, because you think like, oh, well, maybe your dad was a jerk, or like there's a little bit at the beginning where like, you know, but then you read it and you're like, no, this was a noble man who stood behind a sick wife and loved her and protected her.
Yeah.
And even in your mom's book, you know, she's writing letters back and forth and she's getting a special gift for her sister, Mary, your aunt. So that piece of it isn't in her book. It happened after. And you think when you're at the lowest of your low, you're driving across the country for medical procedures, the government isn't paying for it, even though it was because of this exposure, and you're in this awful position and your family's not there. They're not even there to the point where they don't want you to come see your dad when he's dying in the hospital.
Yeah.
It's devastating.
It was devastating. I mean, it took everything from us in so many ways, like the disease, the war. I mean, it just, the effects of the war were not just the immediate PTSD. I mean, it was decades and decades, and it changed everything about the course of her life and our life. And
yours, your kids don't.
And mine.
Your kids don't see their grandma. They didn't get to meet their grandmother.
Yeah.
There's a lot. There's a depth there.
Yeah.
People should know about it for sure. But I think what a beautiful answer to that question of what do we do when we're misrepresented?
Yeah.
Just move forward.
You have to keep moving forward
in what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
You say, I had a front row seat to watching my mom heal. I saw her fight against all odds for what she knew was right. I saw her stand up in the face of incredible adversity and pave a path for those who are right behind her.
Yeah.
It was not easy, but it was important. And she knew that. And I love that John Acuff says, go first and give someone else the gift of going second. Like when you pave a path, and then she was able to fight for the rights of all these women to get just their basic medical needs met.
Yeah.
She's going in and people are saying, you're just, you know, you're overreacting, you're emotional, but she's having nightmares and it's just affecting every asset of life. 1 year, 1 year takes the whole life experience and turns it. And yet she just moved forward. I was beyond impressed and inspired for sure. Mm. And I love, there's just all these little parallels. Like you had to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Here you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your mom's not here.
Yeah.
And you're moving forward in adversity and you're doing a lot of the same things, right? It's like you're building up your own family around you. That's like the family that you choose. Like hers was the Jackson Street AA group.
Yeah.
And you've got your life group. And sometimes that's what we do. We choose. People call it framily.
Yeah. Framily. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm thankful for the lessons learned and also, I write about this a little bit in the book, you know, and I think that there's power to in forgiveness because, you know, the reality is, I mean, this part, especially the family piece of it was hard to write about. It was hard enough to live it, but then it was also hard to like, if I'm just being really kind of frank and transparent here, like I had to toe this line of how do I tell this in an honest way and also honor. I didn't want to like air dirty laundry. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I wanted to be, because I've come a long way. I had to, you know, I didn't, you know, I haven't really talked a lot about this in this conversation, but you know, I didn't grow up, knowing, you know, with a faith background really. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't come to faith and following Jesus until I was in, you know, until I was 25. And so one of the things that I have had to do over the last few years is really work on forgiveness. And that's such a hard thing. And for a long time, I was really angry with my family.
Sure. They abandoned you.
With my mom's family. Yeah. I was really, yeah. I held a lot of anger in. And then I began to slowly work through forgiveness. And I say this in the book, in you know, especially in the case, like I never got to reconcile with my grandmother. That was taken from me. I didn't have that choice. But I have forgiven her in that now I forgive her. And I never got to tell her that. I never got to like have that conversation, but I do forgive her. And then as far as, you know, four of my mom's sisters are still living.
Oh, so Aunt Mary is still alive.
They're all alive. Yeah. All of her sisters are still alive. And I have, you know, a couple of them, I have verbally told them that I forgive them. A couple of them, it's more in the, I've told God that I forgive them. But I still don't have a relationship with any of them, but I have been able to reconcile with one of my cousins and one of my uncles. And the redemption actually was, what was really beautiful was at the 30th anniversary of the women's memorial, my uncle came, who was my mom's brother-in-law by marriage. And he came. That was like such a beautiful picture. Yeah. And I have a relationship now with one of my cousins.
You were like, my uncle's here and my famous friend, Kristen Hanna, is here.
but you know what I mean? It's like, and this is something that's like not fun to talk about, but we all have those. I'm sure that everybody listening, like there's a relationship in your life that was broken at one point. And yeah. Sometimes the thing that we don't want to talk about is sometimes there's restoration there and sometimes there's not. Mm-hmm. And both of those things are okay. And I've gotten to a point where I'm okay with, I am not angry anymore. I don't feel anger. I don't resent them. I wish them well. And I, like I said, I have forgiven them. And that's a piece that like, that is now no longer in the ball's no longer in my court. But if any one of them were to reach out to me and want to reconcile, I would 100% be open to that redemption story. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's a thing that you have to like do. That's an inner spiritual work that has to come with time. And that's, I mean, you know, my mom died 21 years ago. So like, mm-hmm. This has not been like an overnight place that I've gotten to, but I guess I just really felt like I needed to share that for anybody listening who there is the person that immediately when I'm talking about this, like comes to mind, like, cause I'm sure that everybody listening has that person in your life that like, maybe it was a friendship breakup. Maybe it is a family member. Maybe it's an old colleague or something. I don't know, but there's somebody in your life who maybe there's some brokenness there in that relationship and maybe reconciliation is the way to go. And maybe it's just a matter of forgiveness and releasing that like anvil that might be sitting on your shoulders. Anyway, I just felt like I needed to share that.
Do you think they're going to read the book?
I have no idea. And that there are, that is a, I don't know. I don't know. I don't even know if they know it exists.
Let's make it a bestseller.
I have no idea. And if they do, and they want to reach out, I would love nothing more. I would love nothing more. It could be, I think I said, a really beautiful.
Yeah.
thing.
Yeah. I hope for that. I hope for that for you.
And like I said, and I tried to be as honoring as I can while also telling the story in the most honest way that I could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was like, and it was a hard time. I think, especially if you read all three books, there was a lot of turmoil. And sometimes what's interesting is, like, you know, you look at the way that the world is right now and the hate that gets spewed on the internet and things like that. And then you read this book and you're like, oh, you know, like, there is nothing new under the sun. And one of the really impactful stories that I first read in The Women and then read it in your book and then read it in your mom's book, I was like, this is your mom's story, was that, you know, she serves this year in Vietnam. And I mean, when you read just the intensity, you almost can't even really believe that it was real. Like, the things that they're going through there, it's so awful. And she serves a year as a young 20s nurse in these horrific, you know, blood everywhere. I mean, just thing after thing after thing. And there's kids that sometimes listen in. So, I mean, it's important to read, I think, if you're an adult, to have an understanding of how brutally awful that it really was.
Yeah.
So she goes as a young 20s and she serves her country and she saves these men and she holds their hands as they pass and she sees their pictures and their dog tags and just working these shifts that are so unbelievably long and not sleeping. And then she comes home after a year and she's done all this hard work and she has a 20-mile commute to get from one airport to the other.
Get from Travis Air Force Base.
To get them to where they need to go.
Yeah.
And the Army provides no transportation. Mm-hmm. So she's out here having to hitchhike, carrying her bags.
In her fatigues.
Yeah. And the insults that are hurled her way. Mm-hmm. You can't even, how crushing. Mm-hmm. How crushing. People are swearing at her. They're spitting at her. They're throwing their trash out the window at her. And there was a really interesting parallel, I thought, between the two of your stories. Like, I would imagine that you're at one of maybe the lowest points in your life at that point. Mm-hmm. You come home from this just horrendous, confusing experience, and you're wanting to get home. All you want to do is get home, and you can't. No one will pick you up. You got 20 miles to get there. You've got all your bags. And you talked about someone finally stopped. Mm-hmm. Someone finally stopped. And I thought this was so powerful. It reminded me really of the story of the Good Samaritan. Mm. It was, you know, you said an old black man in a beat up 58 Chevy, he finally stopped and got out of his car. He walked with a limp and leaned forward as if he couldn't stand straight. His clothes were frayed, his face deeply lined. He ran his bony fingers through his gray black hair, shook his head and smiled. I don't know where you're going, little girl. But I've been around here four times since early morning. You ain't got a ride yet. I can't let you spend your whole life on this road. And he said he'd rather go out of his way than see me stranded. And he even carried the duffel bag to the truck. And it's like, there was this theme in the book about sometimes one person can change a whole situation. Yeah. And you had that with Janet. Mm-hmm. With Janet. And part of the story is that you squandered a fortune.
Yeah.
So, you know, well, sometimes it happens. And that's something that people want to read in the book as to how it happens. It was just shy of $250,000 is gone. And you're in the lowest place. You're thinking about taking your life. You're in this really low spot. And randomly, you call into the bank. And randomly, Janet.
Yep.
Actually, I would say my favorite phrase in the book was Janet and I. I read that and I thought, this is so funny to me. Because, it could have been anybody else, Molly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Janet talked you off the ledge.
Yeah.
You say, I was being talked off the ledge by a BB&T customer service representative. She spent 5 hours with you. She said, Molly, you're going to be okay. Can we talk about the power that we have in other people's lives?
Yeah.
And we don't even know it sometimes.
Yeah. I think about Janet all the time and Debbie. And the two women that I believe saved my life that day. And they are women that I will never, I've genuinely been like, how could I find them? But I don't think that there's actually a way, really, logistically.
So they don't even know.
No, they have no idea.
I mean, that was one of the things I was thinking. I'm like, here you are, you're on your normal everyday life. You're doing your job. Yeah. You answer the phones.
Right.
And someone calls and you said this was my favorite sentence. So my favorite phase was Janet and I. And actually the paragraph I just read was from your mom's book. I had to color code my notes because I was like, this paragraph, I think, was from your mom's, because she said I was a pariah, a non-person so low.
Yeah.
Did I color code mine?
No, you're fine. The hitchhiking story. I do talk about the hitchhiking story in mine.
Yeah. But you do talk about, and so does, and it's in Kristen Hannah's book.
Yeah.
The hitchhiking story is in there too. It's in all three. This is the trifecta of books to read in 2024. Favorite sentence. I heard it. Compassion. Mm-hmm. So Janice just doing her job.
Yeah.
But she does it compassionately and it changes the course of your life.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I genuinely like, I will never be able to actually thank her, you know, and it's one of those things where I'm like, maybe I could get on Dr. Phil and then Dr. Phil finds Debbie and Janet or something. That's not actually going to happen. So, you know, I was in this moment of I'm having a panic attack. I realize that I have hit financial rock bottom. I'm tens of thousands of dollars in debt. I've blown an inheritance I didn't know I was going to get. And you're right. I mean, I was suicidal. I'm on the edge. I didn't know what to do. And in like this like last ditch effort, I pick up the phone and I call my bank. And in that moment, like the logistics of it is I was actually just calling the bank to hopefully get like some of the overdraft fees fixed. But wow. When she picked up the phone, you know, the BB&T customer service representative, where I'm just calling to beg for my forgiveness on overdraft fees, she heard the panic in my voice and just, I will never forget her. And she just, you know, with her sweet, sweet voice, just basically was like, we're going to get through this. I'm going to help you. And so, I mean, she went not just above and beyond because she was like, I will relieve your fees for overdrafting. But it sounds like, Molly, you're in a whole lot bigger, you got bigger fish to fry. And I was like, mm-hmm, you know, and so she proceeded to sit with me on the phone for hours, figuring out how much debt I was in, helping me go through things, and then help me come up with a game plan for what to do next, because I didn't know what to do next. Yeah. I was lost. And I was so entrenched in shame and guilt and embarrassment that I couldn't possibly ask anybody else in my life to actually help me. And so I had to ask this a complete stranger. I didn't even ask her. She just offered it. And then she connected me with Debbie, who was at a consumer credit counseling agency. And then Debbie was kind of the next person to walk through this with me. And the fact that, you know, at the end of that call, at the end of all of it, Debbie says, can I pray for you? And this was like a Christian organization. Like I didn't know Jesus. But in that moment I was like, yeah, you can. Hmm. And then I never spoke to either one of them ever again.
I hope they read the book.
I know. I do too. I have no idea. You know, I it's kind of a prayer I have that maybe one of them would be like randomly listening to this podcast or I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. Like you just never know. And so my prayer has been that like, if there's ever a person or people that I could thank, it would be Debbie and Janet, these complete strangers that were customer service representatives. And like, think about the job that they are in. They're customer service representatives for a bank and a consumer credit counseling agency. Like I am certain that most of the calls that they have, people probably are terrible to them. Like they're in a really difficult place and a really difficult job. And yet they could have had an attitude when they picked up the phone and there I was sobbing.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. And judgmental. Like, don't you think like they could have been so judgmental?
Right.
Like that's a thing of like, oh gosh, there's this, you know, here's this young girl. She spent all her money and then some.
Stupid, you know.
Yeah. You said compassion. I want to read a little phrase here because I just want people to get a sense of how powerful this book is. And I just think our world needs more powerful books. You say both of these women were complete strangers. And I love how this parallels Molly to your mom's story, that the man who came and finally picked her up on the side of the road after she had been spit on, I mean, sworn of like the nasty swear words I can't say on this. I mean, just people are swearing at your mom and finally someone stops and these, a stranger. Both of these women were complete strangers, yet they suddenly knew more about me than even my closest friends and family. They had compassion for me. They did not saddle me with shame, guilt, or embarrassment, and they sat with me in one of my darkest moments. I learned that compassion, empathy, and listening go a long way. I learned that prayer is powerful. When we offer to pray for someone, even when it seems uncomfortable, we could be planting seeds we may never see to harvest. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, when we accept prayer, it has the power to change hearts. There's more there even. It is such a touching book, Molly.
Thank you.
I mean, so many of these things, and they're so human. They're so human because how much of our life do we interact with strangers? I think a huge portion that we do. So just a reminder to be on the lookout and that, you know, people can hear compassion in our voice. And just a little phone call, you know, that you heard it, compassion. So I just loved Janet and I. I was like, this is great. I love Janet too.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Bree.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Bree, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No-Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
Oh, we're nearing the end here. This is just, like I said, it's one of my favorite books I've ever read. I actually Googled this morning, like, what's the difference between a memoir and an autobiography? Because I had read a long time ago that autobiographies are really good for kids to read because it helps them to see that people's lives have a lot of ups and downs, and that autobiography is more, it's just a little bit more factual. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I love memoirs. Like, I didn't really realize how much I love them. And then I read yours and I read your mom's. Mm-hmm. I have like 19 pages of notes here, but I'm going to find one more thing I had a big question about, which is this. So you talk about it at the beginning. So this is not a spoiler, but your mom passed. Mm-hmm. And she passed when you were still in high school. And you found out while you were writing the book that your dad and your mom knew that, you know, she had been given a certain amount of time to live, but they didn't tell you that. Mm-hmm. They didn't tell you. They said, your mom's going to be sick and she's going to be sick. And this is just sort of where we're at. But they didn't tell you that, well, they'd only given her 2 years. And I know she lived a lot longer than that, but they didn't tell you that. Mm-hmm. Would it have been better to know?
You know, so I touch on this some in the book, but you're right. I had to, I had conversations with my dad, who is going to be 80 this year. I had conversations with my dad while I was writing this manuscript that I should have had a long time ago. I should have asked questions a long time ago. And I didn't. And that, you know, hindsight's 20/20. And the reality is I've learned, especially throughout my own story, is that more often than not, we do what we do with the information that we have at the time. Right. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we just make mistakes, and that is what it is. And so I've wrestled with this because I did learn things that I had to wrestle with. Like, am I mad at my dad for like not telling me that? Am I mad at my parents for hiding this from me? You know? So you know, she was finally diagnosed with her disease in March of 95. She got sick in fall of 94. She got diagnosed in March of 95. And it was at that hospital in Denver, Colorado, where, and we lived, you know, we were living in Virginia. So we had driven cross country to this hospital. It was at that hospital where the doctors basically said to my mom, you have 2 years max. Mm-hmm. She got 8.
Yeah.
But I think about if me and my husband were unfortunately placed in that position, would we tell our kids? And I think the answer is no.
Yeah.
I don't think we would. And so would it have been better for me to know? I don't know that answer. I think where I wrestle is like, and my dad and I have had some of these conversations, is her death and the aftermath, because, you know, she did get 8 years. But for me, like when she died, like in a way, like it was unexpected, but expected, if that makes sense. It's which I realize sounds kind of crazy, but in many ways, for me personally, it was unexpected. Like when we went to bed that night, I did not think that that was the last time I was going to say goodnight to my mother. And if I had known that, I would have said it very differently, as I talk about in the book. Aww. And so, you know, that is just the reality of it. And so it was for me at 17, my senior year of high school, the rug was ripped out from under me.
Yeah.
And then I grieved very poorly. Very, very
well,
poorly.
Well, sure. As would any 17-year-old.
Right. And then with my dad, you know, my dad in a lot of ways, like he knew it was coming. My mom knew it was coming.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as my dad grieved for 8 years, whereas I was like shoved into grief.
Yeah.
So when 2 months after my mom dies, my dad is dating, I'm real mad.
Yeah.
It's more the conversations that we didn't have after she died that I wish had gone a little bit differently.
Yeah.
But my dad and I, like I said, my dad and I are really close. We've had the opportunity now to talk through all this, but I had to learn all of that while I was writing this book. And so that was a whole situation, Jenny. Like I had to really, I had to process through some stuff. I had to grieve some stuff. When I say that there were some parts of this book, as I'm sure are pretty evident when you read it, were really fun to write. Some of it was.
I know we've kind of gone with a really serious route. And like, there is a part I laughed so hard. I mean, but you can't give it away either. Yeah. So, I mean, it is both. It's both ends here. It is moving in that way, but then also these really serious topics. Like you said, your dad and your mom knew she would be sick for the rest of her life. Yeah. That's how you worded it. And you knew she's going to be sick for the rest of her life. But the part you didn't know was that her life probably was not going to be as long as the average person. And that was a piece that was missing for you. And that the part where she does pass, I mean, you're just like, no, I mean, it's a gut punch right there. And I just felt so sorry for you. It's so hard. It's a lot. You've been through a whole lot and your mom went through a whole lot. And so this is just, like I said, it's a very powerful and moving story. Your story is very powerful and also just gives a lot of hope and a lot of life lessons, because you said they laughed through it. I mean, here she is hooked up to all the machines and knee replacements and all these things. And you said, you know, they learned to live for today because tomorrow might not come. She wrote that in her book. And then, you know, you're writing about it in your book and that you learn that maturity is knowing that life isn't fair and learning to live with it. Something that you learned from your mom.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's the title is, it's like I said, I mean, it's just, it's, some of it was so fun and it is really very, very, we did touch on the serious stuff, but I think it's very funny as some of it, my husband, like he has read a couple chapters a few times and they make him laugh every time. So there's some really, really funny stuff.
Yeah.
And then there's some parts that were chewed me up and spit me out when I was writing it. Mm. And so I think it's the both and at the end of the day, like my whole heart and my prayer for this book has been, I mean, 90% of it is up until the age of 25. And then the last bit, I do very honestly and openly share my faith journey and coming to faith in the Lord. And so I don't want to like bamboozle people, but that's an honest piece of it. And that was my own story. But my prayer for the book was that when people close it, when they shut it, that they have laughed, that they have cried. But at the end of the day, like while it is through the lens of my story, you, the reader, you, the listener right now, like you see yourself in it and that you know that the beauty and the brutality of life is that we all experience moments where there is just deep, profound grief and then also just unrelenting, defiant joy. And then just that bit of life where we just, the phrase, like, especially as moms, I know a lot of moms listen to this podcast and dad, like how many parents out there have said, if I don't laugh today, I'm going to cry. Like, you know, that is a mantra of life. And so that's my prayer is that as people see it, that wherever you are in your own story and in your own grief or joy or whatever part of life is where you're sitting in this tension, that there's no situation that it cannot be redeemed, that cannot be forgiven. There's no situation that there is not hope on the other side. And sometimes that takes time and sometimes that's really hard, but that there is hope to be found and there is beauty to be found in the hard. So that's my prayer for it. And so far the people that have read it have shared that that's exactly what they got out of it. And so that's been like, you know, when you're writing something as vulnerable and honest as a memoir and something like this, you just have no idea. And so your words in particular, Jenny, that have encouraged me, and I'm blown away. And I can say with all honesty, like it's just me trying to do the best I can to steward this story well. And it's God's story at the end of the day. And I'm just trying to steward it well. And I just pray that when people open it up, that they do laugh. And just prepare you that you will cry and that you will laugh till you cry. And hopefully you will feel a little bit less alone in your own journey.
Wow, Molly, you shot your arrow and you hit the target.
Oh.
Because that's what I think too. I mean, this is a book about hope. I want to read this verse because it's in the book.
Yeah.
And that was the overarching theme to me was hope. That you hit rock bottom and so did your mom. And your mom hit rock bottom and stayed there but also didn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, she had these just unrelenting hard things and yet still sought after joy and laughter. This is Psalm 40. I waited patiently and expectantly for the Lord, and he inclined to me and heard my cry. He drew me up out of a horrible pit, a pit of tumult and of destruction, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock, steadying my steps and establishing my goings. And he has put a new song in my mouth, a song of praise to our God. Many shall see and fear, revere and worship, and put their trust and confident reliance in the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
That's the book. That's the book.
Amen.
Pulled you up out of the pit and set your feet on a rock, which even that, I mean, we'll tie that into 1,000 Hours Outside right there if we want to tie in.
Yeah.
Is that it feels really good when you come out of a pit and you're on a solid rock, right? Right? You're out there and you're hiking and you're in the miry clay and all you want to do is you want to get to that firm foundation. And this is just such a beautiful book that whatever the situation is that you find, you're misrepresented, you've been lied about, you lost all your money, you're in financial ruin, your family and your friends have forsaken you, you're getting spit at by fellow Americans and sworn at, that there can still be a good life there for you, a good and fulfilling life. It's absolutely a phenomenal book. If I Don't Laugh, I'll Cry by Molly Stillman, How Death, Debt, and Comedy Led to a Life of Faith, Farming, and Forgetting What I Came Into This Room For. Molly, I loved it. We always end with the same question, but I was wondering if you would karaoke for me first. But I don't know how I can do it. I would have to like play it. Oh, I think I can. I'm going to play it. And I wrote down the song. The song is Killing Me Softly with his song.
Oh my gosh.
Are we going to do it?
Oh my God.
Okay, while I cue it up, we can end with this. While I cue it up, can you tell me, because we always end with this and people get mad if I don't do it.
No, I love it.
We end with a favorite memory from your childhood that was outside. And actually, you talked about your childhood a lot in the book, which I thought was cool.
Yeah.
You ran amok. So talk to us about your child while I pull this up.
Yes. Well, so you and I talked about this a little bit on my podcast. So, you know, I grew up in the age of literally, that's why I loved your book so much about where until the streetlights came on, like I was outside and I'm trying to do that in my own parenting journey with my kids. That's part of why we live on a farm. But my favorite memories are when I was, so I grew up in this town called Herndon, Virginia. It was an old town. And we played outside so much that there was a little I don't want to call it a field, but like this, let's call it a big yard, like behind this apartment complex right next to my house. And there was this old foundation of a house that had like burned down like years before I was born. So it was like in the middle of this kind of grassy knoll where it was like, you could just see the foundation of the house. But what was interesting about it was like all the flooring was still intact. So you could see like where there was a bathroom. You could see where there was clearly a kitchen because it was like mapped out. But it was just imagine like taking a house and then just like cutting it off at the floor. And so we would spend hours on the foundation of this house, and the amount of like imaginary play that we would do on this house was just endless. I mean, in a kitchen, like I said, it was just the foundation of a house. Like, there wasn't anything there. It was like tile. You know, you could see the tile, like the pink octagon tile. Like, that was clearly the bathroom. And you could see like the wood that was rotted where there was clearly like the living room. And you could see what was clearly the hallway and the front door area and the front porch. And so it was just all there. And so we would just play there for hours. We'd play TV tag. We would just, I mean, hours. And that was every single day. You know, because I, like I said, I grew up in the same neighborhood. I from birth until college, I lived in the same house. And so I loved it. And so I try to cultivate that same wonder and imagination in my own kids, for sure.
Like, I built a home and then I chopped it off.
Yes, exactly that. But like, we live in an area like in the country where, you know, right next door, like there's an old farmhouse site. And so like, I'd make the kid, like they go play over there and there's, you know, they're constantly finding like old horseshoes along the farm that are like, you know, from, you know, how many hundreds of years ago? We don't know. So it's really fun. I try to cultivate that same just sense of wonder and imagination in them.
I love that. I'm going to see if this will work. I'm going to put it right up to my thing and see if we can get it. Let's see if it works. Hold on. Good. All right. I'm going to try and get to the strumming my pain part. But you can't see the words. Kept them right on. Well, can you hear that?
Yeah, I can.
Strumming my pain. There's no like music, though. Singing my life with his words. Can you hear it? But there's no like actual, like, how can you find the note to sing?
Drumming my pain with his fingers.
Okay, good, good, good. I'll back up. And then we're singing it. Singing.
Drumming my pain with his fingers. Singing my life with his words. Killing me softly with his song. Killing me softly with his song, telling my whole life with his words, killing me softly with his song. Whoa.
That's great. That's great. I mean, there wasn't even like a note to find on there. It was just like a drum pad.
Oh, I could sing that song in my sleep, forwards and backwards. It is my go-to karaoke song from now until all the end of time. And I will 100% just when it gets to the whoa, whoa, whoa part, I'm going to just belt it out with everything that I have.
Molly, I have loved this. This is such a treat for me because just like, it's like the random things, like randomly we've connected.
I know.
And so randomly I got to read your wonderful book and this unbelievable story of this book that comes out the same time as Kristen Hannah's. It's your mom's story. So this truly remarkable and very moving. And this has been such a gift to get to talk with you about it. You grew up dreaming of writing a book. Your mom was a writer. And here it is.
Here it is.
If I don't laugh, I'll cry. Make sure you pick up a copy. Thanks so much, Molly.
Thanks so much for having me, Jenny.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.